You're listening to Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year, presented by Gay City News and GayCityNews.com. I'm your host, Paul Schindler. Welcome to the 20th episode of Talk It Out. This week, we visit Massachusetts, among the least likely of swing states, the only state where bumper stickers could boast, "Don't blame me, I voted for McGovern." Massachusetts is important because it demonstrates what folks in deep blue states can do to pitch in to help secure a Kamala Harris victory on November 5th. That might mean canvassing and driving voters to the polls in nearby purplish New Hampshire. It might mean traveling to Scranton, Pennsylvania, the weekend before the election to pitch in on two key congressional races, on Bob Casey's Senate reelection fight, and in the crucial effort to put the Keystone State's 19 electoral votes in the Democratic column. And for committed activists looking to contribute while staying in their own neighborhoods, it might mean spending Sunday afternoons writing letters and postcards to Democratic-leaning voters in swing states. I speak to Bob Binney, a retired owner of a financial software company who first became involved in politics out of his despair over the results of the 2016 election. In the 8 years since, Bob has become the campaign treasurer to Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, who made history in 2021 by becoming the first woman and the first person of color to lead that city. Bob is also the chair of the Ward 5 Democratic Committee. The phrase Boston Ward 5 Democratic Committee might conjure images of political machines and big city bosses. But what Bob describes is a picture of concerned citizens finding camaraderie and devoting hours to reaching out to fellow Americans hundreds or thousands of miles away to protect our 250-year-old democracy. My guest today is Bob Binney. Bob chairs the Ward 5 Democratic Committee in Boston. Ward 5 is made up of neighborhoods near the city's downtown, including Beacon Hill, Back Bay, South End, Chinatown, and the Fenway. For those listeners who don't live in Boston but have visited Boston, these are neighborhoods you have probably spent time in. Bob is here today to talk about the work he's doing in Ward 5 this year, organizing more than 100 volunteers to do outreach to likely Democratic voters in swing states across the country. But Bob also has a personal story about how he became engaged in his work in Ward 5 that I think will resonate with many of our listeners and perhaps motivate some of you to think about the kind of commitment you can make in ensuring a positive outcome in the consequential election contests we face this year and will face again in years to come. Welcome to the podcast, Bob.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Bob, of course, I want our listeners to understand the work you're doing in Boston, but I also want to dig into your personal background story because I think it's one that many of our listeners will identify with in terms of how the past 8 years since Donald Trump first climbed to top the national political stage changed the way we engage with politics. So let's start off by you briefly describing the work you're heading up with Ward 5 Democratic Committee. Then I want to shift to your personal story before we go back and dive deeper into the weeds about your Ward 5 efforts. In a couple of sentences, Bob, can you describe what your 100 plus volunteers have been up to in Ward 5 this year?
Yes. Well, we started about 20 weeks ago. The idea came to me because I just felt that there's a lot of canvassing and phone calling going on, but there's a lot of people that wanted to do something. I just felt that they wanted to get together and be able to do something more active. So I got a small group of Ward 5 members together, one in particular, a state representative, Jay Livingstone, and we just brainstormed. I said, how can I get something going here? And Jay said, well, we did something like this about 5 or 6 years ago in Cambridge. And I just reserved a room, a space in Cambridge, And we started inviting people. And before you know it, we had, 10, 15 people coming every week. It was kind of a nice way it kicked off. And he said, maybe you could think of that. So I did. I rented a space and I started inviting people. And the first week, it was a Sunday. I said, come on Sunday between 1 and 4. I rented the space for those hours. And, come when you can, leave when you want. There's no requirements at all. I will supply the material. And we're going to write letters, which my wife and I had done in previous elections, or postcards and or postcards. And we'll see where it goes. So the first week we had 4 people. And last week we had 25 people. So over this 20 weeks, I've been getting emails, texts, phone calls from people. And now we have 125 volunteers on my list. They don't all show that on a Sunday, but they rotate. And they come when they can and they leave when they want. We have now written over 12,000 letters and postcards to individuals that we have been given the addresses to from 4 campaigns that I've done the research on and selected these campaigns that I like the best. So it's just a fun group of people that love to come and sit around these round tables and chat. And they knock out these letters, and we've come up with scripts together. But how should we write this particular letter? And everyone has their input. We finalize a nice script. And I really like that. I really like that. So that's kind of the process that we're doing. So as of last week, as I mentioned, we've completed 12,000 letters and postcards. It's phenomenal to me. I just, the first week we did 50, the second week, maybe 150, and then we get up to 500. And I said, wow, this is amazing. Next thing you know, we're breaking 1,000, then 5,000. And last week was just shocking. It's kind of a miracle, really.
So a little later on, we'll get into how you're targeting these voters, what these groups you're working with are, and what kind of messages you're sending these folks, and also how the costs of all this are being covered. But I want to back up now and go back to 2016, when you first became involved with the Ward 5 Democratic Committee. Tell us about how that happened, what your thinking was, what your conversations with your wife were at that time that led you to take this step and become more involved.
Well, that November 8th, 2016 was in the 9th and the 10th were the worst days of my life. I probably got an hour's sleep in those 3 or 4 days. I was sick. I was just horrified as to what was going on. And it just got worse, obviously, over the next 4 years, but in my mind anyway. And those first couple of weeks, maybe months, my wife was really getting concerned. She said, Bob, you really are losing it here. You're screaming at the television. You have to do something. And she said, I just saw something in the local paper that they're looking for members for Ward 5. It's a Democratic committee. I don't know what it's about, but maybe you should join and, talk to these people. Maybe you could do something collectively. So I went to a meeting, and there were a bunch of younger, mostly younger volunteers at this event, all residents of Ward 5. And really smart young people, very politically active. And I'm thinking, I'm a business. I've never done anything in politics. I voted all my life, but I've never really participated at all. And I said, I'm not part of this at all. This is way over my head. They're really sharp people. But I kind of liked what I heard. And so I went back the next month to another meeting. And before you know it, I was going every month. And after about 6 months, I started talking to different people, and they asked me what I did for a living. And they said, well, we need a treasurer for our ward committee. Would you do it? And I said, sure. I ran my own business. I'm not an accountant, but I know how to balance books. And so it was the best thing that ever happened, because I got to meet every single member of the ward committee. And it was just a fun experience for me. Collecting money and reporting on you have to report every month on the finances of the group. So it just was a good thing for me. And I got right in the middle of the activities. So from there, I just became very involved in a lot of political activities, helping people run for office. In fact, I was introduced to a city councilor at the time who also needed a treasurer, and she asked me if I'd be interested in being her treasurer. Her treasurer had just left Boston. And I said, sure. So I've been her treasurer. She has since become mayor of Boston, which is really kind of a thrill. And I really enjoyed that very much. And I still am her campaign treasurer. So with that, about last year, the chairperson of Ward 5 decided to run for city councilor. There was a little bit of work behind the scenes that they came to me and said, you know, Bob, we've kind of appointed you as the next chair of Ward 5. We'd really like you to run for it. And so I did, and they elected me chair of Ward 5. So I've been the chair for about a year and a half now, and I'm really enjoying it.
So let's dig in just a little deeper here. So you went to this first meeting weeks or so after the 2016 election. A lot of the folks there were young people. You at this point were retired.
Exactly.
You had run and subsequently sold a financial software company. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
And so you had familiarity with the financial world. You had familiarity with software. And even though you felt like, gee, I've never done anything in politics before, you were intrigued enough to stay involved. You since became the campaign treasurer to Mayor Wu, who won kind of a landmark victory as Boston mayor a couple of years ago. And now you're the chair of this ward committee. So it's been an arc of real increased engagement for you.
Very much so. Very much so. Yeah.
And how is doing that work addressed the anxiety and the agitation you were feeling in those first few weeks after the 2016 election that drove your wife crazy?
Well, she introduces me now as, this is my husband, the man that single-handedly is trying to save democracy. So it really hasn't lightened up too much with her, although she does love to see how active I am. And I honestly feel like not in 2016. I did some minor things during that campaign, but nothing like what I'm doing now. And I just feel like, and everyone on Sundays feel like they're doing something for this election. And it just, we walk out of there feeling like $1 million. It just is such a wonderful feeling. We don't know what's going to happen. I'll get into the campaigns that we support and why I think they're very valuable. But that's another topic that we'll talk about later if you want.
I want to take a bit of a digression here, Bob, because in many ways, this story takes this podcast full circle in an interesting way. Back in May, I did the first episode of Talk It Out. And during that episode, I mentioned a book that I had just read, Politics is for Power, written by Eitan Hersh. Eitan Hersh is a political science professor at Tufts University up in nearby Medford, just a couple of miles up Massachusetts Avenue from Ward 5. And part of Hersh's book recounts how he, like you, in the wake of the 2016 election, became involved with the Democratic committee in the town where he lives, which is Brookline, which is even closer to Ward 5 than Medford. The overriding theme of Hersh's book was that knowing about what was going on in politics means nothing unless you pitch in by taking action to create real change in society. Mm-hmm. And Hersh pointed to statistics that among voters opposed to Trump in 2016, who followed the news carefully every single day, less than 5% of them did anything to ensure that he would not be elected. Hmm. And Hersh's book came up during that first episode because I was interviewing a guy named Brian Derrick. Now, Brian Derrick is a political strategist who co-founded a website, Oath.Vote. Oath.Vote offers guidance to political contributors about which donations they make will have the greatest impact on the issues they care about. And during that discussion, Derrick said, you know, you can read the New York Times and the Washington Post every day. You can watch MSNBC or CNN every evening, and you can check and recheck and recheck the polling results on 538.com or on Real Clear Politics. But if you don't do anything with the knowledge that you gain, you might as well spend the summer and the early fall at the beach. And that is a point that Brian Derrick makes over and over again. One of his slogans is stop doom scrolling and do something. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of conclusion that you came to in 2016, that unless you did something, all of your passion and knowledge and care meant nothing?
I honestly wish that was in my heart when I made these decisions, but it probably wasn't exactly that. But I knew deep down I had to do something. I just had to do something. And it wasn't as eloquent as you stated in the book, but that, I guess that's the underlying theme, that if I didn't, how could I complain about, how could I scream at the TV and how could I do all of those crazy things I was doing in 2016 and do it again in 2024. That's crazy. So
what's your sense of how many of your participants in Ward 5, whether you're formal members or your volunteers, came at this through a similar course, through their shock and dismay at the fact that Donald Trump had become president, that he lost, but, you know, fairly narrowly in 2020, and that he's back again this year?
Yeah. Let me step back for a second, because the groups that we have on Sundays, they're 90% women, and on the senior level, I would say. And these are people that in the discussions that we have on Sundays, they love this opportunity to be able to sit and write their thoughts on a piece of paper and send it out, because they just don't have the energy to be able to canvas and they don't feel comfortable making phone calls. So this is an ideal opportunity for them. And when they heard about this and the word has spread since, they said, this is perfect for me because I really do want to do something. I think it is exactly what you said, that they really are driven, that the from 4 to 125 is driven because people really do want to do something. And they honestly, as I said earlier, they just walk out of that room at 4 o'clock or 4:30 or 5 o'clock. I mean, we just keep going. They don't want to stop until we finish this sheet of paper. You know, this is the way they are. So I think that's exactly right, that they feel a need to do something, and this is helping them satisfy that need.
So you describe a group of volunteers that are largely women, many of them either seniors or approaching senior status. But you also mentioned that the ward committee, when you first joined, had a lot of younger members. Is your sense that those folks are doing other kinds of activities this year?
Yes, they are. There's a large group that is heading up to New Hampshire every weekend. The Mass Dems are very active in New Hampshire. They have a program of campaigning, phone calling, and they meet over in Porter Square in Somerville, and cars that drive up from there. So that's where a large number of our Ward 5 younger crowd are heading towards. That's what they do on weekends.
And New Hampshire has voted Democratic in the last bunch of presidential cycles. Joe Biden won the state by about 7 points, but some of the polls this year have been tighter than 7%. Right. And New Hampshire is probably one of the blue states that's tighter than many others. Mm-hmm. And so the sense in Massachusetts is that Democrats up in New Hampshire can use a hand.
Yes, yes.
So in other words, a lot of those younger members are actually out there knocking on doors, doing things that maybe some of your volunteers are either less comfortable doing or perhaps don't necessarily have the energy to be doing
that's
on a
correct.
Weekend.
Very well put. Yeah.
Tell us more about the postcard and letter writing campaigns, and specifically, what groups are you working with? What target states are you focused on? What kind of messages are you sending out to potential voters?
There are maybe 8 or 10 that we've participated in, but we've boiled it down to basically 4 that we're really active in. The reason we selected the 4, they seem to be the group that have done the most research in analysis and identified the people that we really feel would be receptive to a letter or an envelope, potentially.
So these are nationwide groups that are doing this research potential voters in swing states. Is that correct?
Primarily swing states. So, for example, not example, this is specific. Ohio, Michigan, Georgia, Maine, Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Texas. Those are the states that we've dealt with in these groups. With Vote Forward, which is probably, they probably occupy 60% of our work, is letter writing. And they have done over 7.5 million. They have accumulated 7.5 million addresses, and they're going to open up another 1.5 million before the end of the election period. And what they've done is they've done segmentation of that to a point where, for example, they identified 1.5 million Americans that live overseas that really vote. And so that was one thing we worked on very early on. We sent letters to those. We didn't send 1.5 million, but we sent a large number of ours to those voters, potential voters overseas. We exhausted that 1.5 million, and then they opened up another group of addresses to battleground states, get out to vote. If you haven't registered, register. If you, and they're all neutral as far as partisanship is. We don't try to convince them Democrat or Republican. It's all get out the vote primarily. That is the message. So the message that we kind of came up with, that we kind of like the best. The question on the letter from Vote Forward is, I vote because. And I say, I want my voice heard. Join me in supporting democracy. Please vote. Thank you. So very simple, but to the point, thank you when I sign my name. That's what we've been sending out, basically, in the letters and the postcards.
So these are handwritten letters that you're writing?
Yes. Yes.
Handwritten letters. The group is Vote Forward. They're votefwd.org. And you're talking about 9 million voters that they're identifying by November 5.
Exactly.
That groups like yours are sending letters to. These are get out to vote or register letters, voter registration letters, not vote for Kamala Harris.
That's right.
Or vote for Sherrod Brown as senator in Ohio. These are get out to vote messages. Bob, what is your understanding of how Vote Forward targets these names and addresses so that you're sending these letters to likely or potential Democratic voters?
So my understanding is that they actually have gone to the results, which are public knowledge, the results of what your voting records, and they determine who hasn't voted, a Democrat, registered Democrat, or a registered independent that hasn't voted. That's how they're collecting those addresses.
In other words, they're identifying what I think people in the field tend to call low propensity voters, people who tend not to vote in every election. And when someone doesn't vote in a presidential election, I think that's noteworthy.
Right.
And these folks are registered independents and or registered Democrats. Right. So your view is there's a very good shot that if you get these people to vote, it will end up being a Democratic vote.
Correct.
And so the first group of people that you addressed letters to there were Americans abroad.
Correct.
And that was out of a pool of about 1.5 million voters that Vote Forward had identified. And you sent some portion of that out in your first wave of letters.
Exactly.
Have you addressed letters to other states through Vote Forward since then?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So, for example, we just got as part of the new release of addresses, were probably about 500,000 names, actually 300,000 names. I just looked it up. 300,000 names in Texas.
Okay.
Young new voters under 35 that haven't voted yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we are sending letters to these 300,000 right now. We've not asked 300,000, but we've our selected period. I just downloaded a bunch of addresses so that we'll be sending letters this weekend to those people, to those young kids.
And so that's interesting to me in a couple of respects. First of all, the voting habit is something that Americans seem to develop only slowly over time, so that our youngest voters, you know, I can remember the day when it was a big deal to get 18-year-olds to be allowed to vote. But in fact, 18 to 25-year-olds tend not to vote at particularly high numbers. And so what you're working on here is helping those younger people, those voters under 35, develop that habit of voting early.
Yep.
The other interesting thing to me there is that even though we think of Texas as a deep red state, in fact, the percentage for Democratic candidates has increased dramatically over time from Obama to Biden. It went from, I think, about 18% down to about 7% down. And also this year, there is a heated U.S. Senate race. Colin Allred, a Democratic congressman from the Dallas area, former NFL football player, is up against Ted Cruz. And the polls in that race have been very tight. Cruz has had an advantage, but not an overwhelming one. And there is some hope that this shift over time toward Democrats in Texas could elect Colin Allred, which is important because if the Democrats are going to hold the Senate, they're either going to have to win all the races that they're up for this year, or they're going to have to pick off a Republican or two.
Exactly.
And Colin Allred, from everything I've seen, Bob, is the most likely Democrat to take out a Republican. Now, I'm certainly not suggesting that people put any money down on that, but I think it's a race I've been watching very closely, and I think a lot of other folks are. And the National Democratic Senate Committee has started putting money into that race. So it's very interesting in that respect that you are writing letters to Texas. What are some of the other states you're targeting in this vote forward effort?
As I mentioned, Ohio and Michigan, Georgia, Maine, we just did a group in Maine. At that point in time, it was to register to vote. So we wrote letters to those. Let me see, Arizona and Pennsylvania is always in Texas, of course.
And Ohio is interesting because that's a state that, you know, Trump is doing well in, but Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, who is now running for a fourth term, a very well-established progressive, is in a tight race there. He's doing well in the polls, but certainly driving Democratic turnout there is going to be important for his
very
victory.
Important.
What are some of the other groups you're working with?
Well, that is very interesting. There's another group. They're not as active as Vote Forward or Blue Wave, but this is a postcard campaign, and it's Mothers for a Brighter Future. And they specifically identify candidates that they want to encourage people to vote for. So we've sent a bunch of cards to Pennsylvania for Bob Casey, for Ohio, which is for Brown, and also Arizona for Ruben Gallego. That's a whole group that we focus on for grandmothers. We'll kind of dry that up at this point.
Right. And that's Grandmothers for a Brighter Future.
Correct. It would be grandmotherpostcards@gmail.com is the link for that.
Right. Right. And those are postcards that actually target a specific partisan message.
That's
in other
correct.
Words, not simply get out and vote, but get out and vote for Bob Casey. Get
That's
out
correct.
And vote for Sherrod Brown.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So those three states you're targeting, you're playing in essentially the Senate races there.
Right.
But of course, for Bob Casey and Ruben Gallego, that will also potentially have an impact on votes for Kamala Harris in Pennsylvania and Arizona.
Of course.
Those are postcards. They supply the postcards. You print them. How does that work?
Well, they supply a template. And they've got a message on the front about Bob Casey and about, you know, each of the candidates. And then we write a message on the back when we write the address and put the stamp on. Template I bring to Staples or wherever and print out these yellow, canary yellow cards and have them cut up.
You mentioned Blue Wave. Tell me about what that's all about.
That's another excellent campaign. They've done over 10 million addresses so far. They're slowing down as well, although they keep coming out with new campaigns as they identify people that haven't voted yet, for example, and they're targeting that. But we've done a large number of those postcards for Blue Wave, and it's, again, neutral, nonpartisan message that we're sending out. Get out to vote.
You said people who haven't voted yet, are they actually able to look at early voting on that? Is that the way that works?
That's the way that works. Yes, they can see that a person actually, their vote has actually been registered as accepted.
Okay, so in other words, in real time, we're finding out this second week of October
exactly.
Who has not yet participated in early voting, and these postcards are a nudge to say, hey, you've got X number of days left. You mentioned polling places. Do these letters and postcards give recipients information about where they vote?
Yes, that's a really interesting question. Every letter that we send out has a QR code that you could, you know, take the picture of it, and it'll identify the location where you should vote. And they have a telephone number and an email address if you're not that technical and you don't want to use a QR code.
Right.
So every one of them, and the postcards too, they have the same thing, a little QR code and address. If you have not voted or you need to register to vote, this is how you do it. Very simple. All the instructions are on the postcards or the letters.
And that's very interesting, because a lot of what I've heard in doing these podcasts over the last 20 weeks myself, I guess we've both been working on the same schedule, Bob. A lot of people talk about the importance of making a plan to vote. And what you're saying is, not only are you encouraging people either to vote or to vote for Bob Casey, but you're also saying, hey, and while you're at it, here's the information you need to make your plan to vote.
Exactly.
And that can be important. I know, for example, I spoke to someone in Ohio who talked about the fact that there has been a lot of changes in polling locations there over the past 4 years. And so people who were used to voting at this elementary school suddenly find out that they have to go to that church instead to vote. And I know in Arizona, for example, there has been so much concern about potential unrest at polling places that a lot of schools in Arizona have said, no, thank you, we're not going to be a polling place anymore. So information about where people can vote is critical.
Sure is.
Because you get in your car and you go to the wrong location and you might say, hey, you know what? I got to get to work in half an hour, and so I just won't be voting this time. What difference does that make? What else about these postcard and letter writing campaigns, in your view, are significant?
It is the campaigns that I selected that make it easy.
So these nationwide organizations are ones that you vetted, you felt comfortable with to work with, and you have been confirmed in your initial assessment that these are
Absolutely.
Good groups to work with. And there's costs involved here. There's stamps, there's postcards you're printing, there's envelopes and so forth. How are those costs covered, Bob?
Well, Wood 5, our only funding is through membership dues that we pay once a year. And, you know, so we don't have a big fund, but they graciously offered to pay for the material for this effort, because that's our purpose, is to support elections, support candidates, support causes. So they've offered to do that, which is fantastic. So that really takes a big burden. But all of the volunteers that are coming, I've said the only funds we have are through our donations as members to Ward 5. Any donations would be really greatly appreciated. And they've all stepped up and given some money. It's been a real nice collective effort by everyone on that front.
So the Neighborhood Democratic Organization in the city of Boston, you got 23 wards. One of your wards is paying for costs to motivate voters, not in Ward 5, not to win some local race in Ward 5, but to help voter turnout in states all around the country.
Correct. Nicely said. I really like that. I hadn't thought of it that way. Very well put.
I want to switch gears here. I know that you and some other members and volunteers in Ward 5 are headed to Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
The weekend before the election. Scranton, Pennsylvania, the town that Joe Biden has bragged about for years and years. What are you going to be up to there?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, Joe, he does brag about that a lot, but he only spent 11 of his years there. So, but it is a very important segment of Pennsylvania. It's what we call a triple play because there are two representatives that are running out of those districts, out of Scranton and Wilkes-Barre. And of course, Bob Casey's running as a senator, and we have the presidential election. So anything we can do. And in 2020, there are eight counties that encompass that area, and Joe won five and Trump won three. And Joe only won a few of those by a very few number, 400 in one case. So we just feel like if we could get down there and identify those people that haven't voted yet and knock on doors, make phone calls, help people drive to the polls, whatever we can do over the that long weekend before the election and during the election. That's our whole purpose. So there's a whole group of us going down from Boston. Ward 5 members are going down.
So you're going to be down there Saturday through Tuesday? Is that
we're going to, my wife and I are driving down, and a couple of other people are leaving on Friday morning, but others are going down earlier, spend a little bit longer there. But basically, yeah, that's at least the weekend, probably longer.
And so you'll be there, some of you at least will be there through Election Day itself.
Through the election, right. Right.
I took a look at the races in that area. There are two Democratic Congress members in the Scranton area, Matthew Cartwright in Pennsylvania 8 and Susan Wild in Pennsylvania 7. Both of them have been in office between 6 and 12 years, and both of them have consistently won re-election, but the races have been tight, 2 to 3%. And right. So if the Democrats are looking to regain Congress this January, they're at the very least going to have to hold these tight House races in places like Pennsylvania. So that's the work you're going to be doing. It's going to be door knocking, all the traditional kind of work that volunteers who are canvassing do.
Exactly.
Do you know how many people are going down from your group?
I've heard 40.
40? Okay. Yeah. So that's a nice contribution to be making in a critical swing area. And I know also some of your volunteers are going to be involved in efforts to drive voters to the polls up in New Hampshire on Tuesday itself. What do you know about those efforts?
I don't know too much because I really haven't been involved in the New Hampshire thing, although I am very involved with Mass Dems and I convey whatever they tell me to the Ward 5 committee. But I do know that that is a big effort to get people up there with cars, and it's very organized in New Hampshire, in Portsmouth and Manchester, and there's three or four locations where people are going every weekend, and that those will be the points where they'll go to receive the calls to help for driving.
Is that Rideshare to Vote? Is that the organization that they're working with from what you know?
I don't think so. I think that's a separate organization. This Rideshare to Vote is nationwide. That's an organization that I really love. My wife and I have been giving to them for the last three elections. I just love the way they present themselves. All the money goes right into use money for gas, for tolls, for teaching drivers how to drive a bus, all of these things. So I just think that's a great cause across the country.
I know that they're working in all seven of the states that folks are talking about as being presidential swing states. And they have worked in, I think, a dozen other states over the years, including New Hampshire. But the effort that you're aware of in New Hampshire is separate and is being organized by the Mass Dems efforts to go up to New Hampshire on an ongoing basis.
That's correct. Mass Dems, along with the organization up in New Hampshire, they're working very close together, the Mass Dems and the New Hampshire Democratic committees.
So Mass Dems has been working throughout the election cycle with the New Hampshire party.
Right.
And that has involved canvassing, and it's going to involve taking voters to the polls as well.
Yes.
Bob, any final thoughts you want to share about what folks can be doing or should be thinking about over the remaining weeks of this campaign?
The remaining weeks, do something. As Michelle said at the convention, Oh, by the way, I was a delegate at the convention. I don't know whether I could mention that to you, and that was a thrill of my life. It was the first time I'd ever been to anything quite like that, and I took the initiative. Somebody had mentioned, "Well, you ought to try to be a delegate," and so I went to one event where they were voting in, and it was all set up. The congressman had already picked the delegates he wanted, and it was kind of a waste of my time. But then somebody, as I was leaving there, they said, if you go down to Bourne, which is down the Cape, on a Saturday morning, they said there'll be an election down there for the at-large delegates. Massachusetts state members will be voting these people. It's not an open vote. So I took a week and I called every single member of the Mass Dem members, introduced myself, and told them why I thought I should be a delegate. And I went down, and didn't I get elected to be a delegate? And honestly, it was an event that changed my life personally. To be there and witness what I did, you probably saw it on TV. It was as thrilling as you saw on TV, and more so. It was energizing, loving. It was just a love fest. It was everything you could imagine. It was beautiful. So with that's another thing that this thing has given me that I never would have ever imagined in my life. As a retired businessman, playing golf and doing, and that was it. That's what I figured it was going to be, and here I am. So I just love the feeling of leaving Sundays with a stack of letters heading to the mailbox to stick them in the mailbox. It just feels so damn good. It really does.
So for folks who might be listening and are in or near Boston and want to help you out over the next few weekends, how do they get in touch with you?
They could send it to my email address, Robert D as in Douglas, Binney, Binney, at gmail.com.
Bob Binney, who chairs the Ward 5 Democratic Committee in Boston, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you very much, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Bob Binney, Chair of Boston's Ward 5 Democratic Committee. And thanks to all of you for joining me again this week. In our next episode, going live on Wednesday, October 23rd, we'll look back on our past 20 episodes to highlight those insights most helpful to bear in mind as we face the final 2 weeks of this historic presidential campaign. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe now to Talk It Out, LGBTQ Voices in a Queer Election Year on Apple, Spotify, and other podcast platforms.